Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to deal with the rising cost of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage, pretty much anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Well, with Yahoo Finance, you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need in order to help you reach that financial freedom. And when it comes to your financial future, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, you've invested all that you can. And now you need to take those investments to the next level by using what every financial great uses. Yahoo Finance. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
The Peter Schiff Show.
We had one piece of positive economic news over the last several days. It was the ISM non-manufacturing index for July, which surged to 60.3. Analysts were looking for 56.2, a slight uptick from the 56 from June. And that was the highest number in 10 years, although this was kind of the outlier, this index. And again, it's just the service sector, non-manufacturing. Manufacturing ISM has been quite weak. But of course, the service sector depends on manufacturing imported products, and it depends a lot on the economy. And I believe that the service sector, whatever's going on now, I think you're going to see some sharp reversals as employers in that sector finally come to terms with economic reality, where today they're still living in denial. Because most of the news that has come out over the last several days has been bad. Let's start with the ADP employment report, which is a precursor to the government's official non-farm payroll numbers that come out tomorrow. ADP reports on private sector employment. They were looking for 210,000 private sector jobs. Instead, we only created 185,000. That's one of the lowest numbers of the last couple of years, well below the consensus. They even knocked down last month a little bit from 237 to 229. But overall, much weaker number than what Wall Street was looking for. And in fact, the goods producing component was very weak, was only, I think, 9,000 jobs total, of which 2,000 were in manufacturing. So that was another sign that the labor market is not improving, but worsening. And again, remember, Janet Yellen is claiming that as a precursor to a rate hike, as a requirement to a rate hike, the job market has to make additional improvements beyond the improvements that have already been seen. And clearly, that is not what is going on. Not only is the labor market not getting stronger, but it is, in fact, getting weaker. Now, we'll get the government's number tomorrow, and that'll probably be the more important of the two. And it's hard to say, with all these part-time jobs being created, it's always difficult to handicap the number. But my guess is that it's going to be another disappointing number. That seems to be the trend. the numbers tend to come out as, you know, below estimates. And so that'll probably be the case again today. We also got the trade deficit that came out from June. That swelled about 7.1% from the prior month, although that was in line with expectations. But still, you know, it's a big trade deficit. Imports were up, exports were down. And of course, you know, a weak economy has to borrow money to pay for all the products that they can't produce, which is what we're doing. We're importing what we are incapable of producing. But we got more negative economic news today. The layoffs for the month of June were reported, and the number surged to 105,696. Right, that's the biggest announced layoffs in 4 years. September 2011 was the last time the number was, I guess, that high, or this is the highest since then. In fact, that's the only other time the number's been north of 100,000. You know, last month it was 44,842. Now, 57,000 of those numbers come from the military, which is announcing layoffs of both civilian and military personnel. Now, normally, yeah, whenever the government is laying people off, that's actually a benefit for the economy because now we no longer have to pay people to be unproductive. Those workers are freed up to work in the private sector. Problem is, there's not going to be jobs in the private sector thanks to the government. Now, the government was borrowing money to employ them in the government sector, but that's not going to happen in the private sector. So it's just going to be more people that are going to join the ranks of the unemployed, or maybe they won't even be considered unemployed because they'll just stay out of the labor market completely and they'll just disappear from these statistics. If you actually look, though, at the announced layoffs thus far this year, comparing it to the same period last year, it's a 34% increase over last year. And in fact, if you look at all the announced layoffs thus far in 2015, this is the highest year-to-date total since 2009. Now, that doesn't sound to me like a labor market that's getting better. It sounds like a labor market that is getting worse. Remember that long losing streak we had in the Consumer Comfort Index from Bloomberg? Well, it broke it. I think we had 1 week where it wasn't down, and now we're back with another 5 week losing streak. The index, the comfort index, now down to 40.3. It's the second lowest since November. Again, it's the fifth decline in a row on the weekly index. And in fact, for the month of July, I just read this, that the Consumer Comfort Index had its largest monthly decline in 4 years. Clearly, you know, the economy is not getting better. But the Atlanta Fed today dropped what should have been a bombshell on those people who are so optimistic about the economy. You know, I was watching CNBC the other day, and Mark Zandi was on there right after this lousy payrolls number came out from ADP, and he was just dismissing everything and claiming that we were in a 3% economy, that the economy was growing 3%. What is Zandi looking at to claim that we have a 3% economy? Because there's no, you know, the people accuse me of not wanting to accept the data. Well, what about Mark Zandi? He's not accepting the data. The data from the U.S. government is 1.45% for the first half. Where does that come to a 3% economy? Even the 2.3% growth of the second half isn't close to 3%. We haven't had a 3% economy in years. So why should we have one this year? But here is the Atlanta Fed coming out with their first forecast for Q3. Now, remember, the Atlanta Fed GDP now has been the closest of the official estimates. They were predicting 2.4 for Q2. They got 2.3, pretty close. They were predicting, I think, plus 0.2 for Q1. It ended up being plus 0.6 after the revisions. So they've been closer than any other official estimates. The Wall Street consensus now is, I think, about 3 or 3.2 for the third quarter. Well, the Atlanta Fed predicted, I don't have a drum or I do a drum roll, but the Atlanta Fed prediction for QE3 is 1%. That's it. 1.0 for the third quarter. Now, the third quarter last year was 5%. So we're 80% slower than last year. What a massive decline in growth. And of course, if we do get 1% for the first quarter, Well, might get lower than that for the fourth quarter, because that has been the pattern. The second and third quarters have been the stronger quarters. The first and fourth have been the weaker quarters. So if the fourth quarter is going to be weaker than the third, and the third is only going to be 1%, what's it going to be? Below one? Is it going to be below zero? Are we going to contract in the fourth quarter? Maybe. Is the Fed going to raise rates in June, given the rapidity of the slowdown? I don't see how the markets can anticipate that. But still, I mean, gold was up $5 today. I mean, really nothing. I mean, the dollar was slightly lower. I mean, you would think that there would be a bigger reaction. But no, everybody is still looking at this naked emperor, waiting for Janet Yellen to say that it has no clothes. You know, the question is, when is she going to utter those words? Maybe tomorrow we get the official numbers, if we get a very bad number. Maybe, but the Federal Reserve is still, you know, making economic lemons out of all this lemonade, and, you know, nobody wants to look at it. But also, look at the stock market. I think we've had six consecutive down days now in the stock market. The Dow closed off 120. Earlier in the day, it was down about 170, which put it to the lows since the first few days of February. So that meant a six-month low. The NASDAQ composite at one time was down over 100 points, closed down 83. It's still above 5,000, so that index is still doing better on the year. You know, it's interesting that the stocks with no earnings are the ones that are doing the best this year. Very reminiscent of the dot-com days, right? It's the companies that are losing money, that are trading on nothing but hope, right? It's the story stocks. It's the sizzle, not the steak, that's selling in 2015. Companies that actually have earnings are the ones that are seeing the biggest pressure on their share price. And I think this is going to continue until the Fed cries uncle, right? Every time we've had a major decline in the stock market, or not even a major decline, because we haven't had one of those in years, but when it started to go down and people started to get nervous, right, it's always the Federal Reserve that comes to the rescue. But they can't do that this time unless they want to abandon their rate hiking rhetoric. They can't rescue the markets by talking about QE4 if they're still talking about rate hikes. They got to take the rate hikes off the table before they can put QE4 on the table. Right? And of course, I've said before, they never really took it off the table. Everybody believed that they did, but they just don't really look at what they're saying. Right? Janet Yellen again, I'm only going to raise rates if the economy gets better. But there's no evidence to suggest that it has. But the Fed just wants to pretend that it has so it can keep pretending that it's getting ready to raise rates, as it's assuring everybody, if you actually believe what Janet Yellen is saying, if Janet Yellen is true to her words and she says she is data dependent, well, based on all of the data, she's not going to raise rates. The only way she's going to raise rates is if she ignores the data and raises them anyway. Right? But that's not what she's saying. They're not saying we're going to ignore the data. They're saying we are data dependent. It all depends on the data, right? Well, the data is no good, right? Now, the unemployment rate is low, but it's been low for a long time. If a low unemployment rate was going to justify a rate hike, they would have hiked rates a long time ago. So obviously, that's not it. They're looking at other aspects of the economy, yet all the other aspects that they could possibly be looking at are pointing in the wrong direction, right? If the economy is going to grow at the slowest pace of the entire recovery in 2015, why would the Fed raise rates now? What's the point of waiting till the economy is at its weakest and then kicking it in the groin with a rate hike, right? They should have raised interest rates a few years ago so they can be cutting them now. Right? Based on how rapidly the economy is decelerating, normally the Fed would be talking about cutting rates now, right? To stimulate the economy. But they can't do that because they never stopped stimulating it. They never administered the sedative, theoretically. So, you know, they never slammed on the brakes. So now they can't put their foot back on the gas because it's been on the gas the whole time and the economy is still stalling out. So all they can really do is go back to the drawing board, you know, with more failed QE. Of course, they're not going to admit that it failed, right? They're going to pretend that it worked. They're just going to say they need a booster shot, right? Because, I don't know, they're going to come up with some external factor, some excuse that says, well, you know, we thought we were going to raise rates, but again, this happened or that happened. Nobody could have predicted some of these things. And, you know, again, maybe they're going to say it's because inflation's not high enough. I mean, that's always their ace in the hole, right? To just say we don't have enough inflation and Therefore, we're going to, delay the rate hikes. But why wait until the economy is really slowing down to raise rates? I mean, the answer is because had they raised rates a couple of years ago, it would have slowed down sooner. You know, that is the fact that the Fed doesn't want to admit that it's one gigantic bubble and they have to keep blowing air into it. And you can already see what's happening to that bubble. Even though interest rates are still at zero, they're not blowing air into it in the form of QE anymore. I mean, they still have the air coming in from the 0%, but they don't have the extra air from the QE. But what's happening is people are anticipating the end of this QE, right? They think the Fed is finished printing money. And as I've been saying, they're just getting warmed up. Right? They have only not even yet begun to print. This is the beginning. This is early in the game. There's a lot more money printing to come, right? Those helicopters, the Ben Bernanke helicopters are in the hangars, but they're getting ready to go for a massive money dump. That's the only thing the Fed can do. Not that it's going to work. It's not going to work, but that's what they're going to do. Right? Because that's the only policy remedy they have, and they certainly can't admit that it doesn't work, that it's wrong, because then they have to admit that everything they've done was wrong, which of course it is, but people are still not figuring that out. But now you've got the stock market coming down, technically breaking down, lots of big companies now cracking. If you look at what's happening in the market, some of these big name companies really getting beaten up in the entertainment space. Look at Disney, look at Time Warner. Some of the biotech high-flying stocks are coming down. Tesla took a big beating. Some of these big story stocks, earnings are disappointing. And that's going to continue. And we're putting in a major, major topping pattern. And that has got to worry the Fed. Because if the Fed starts raising rates, it's going to accelerate the decline. And we're in a bear market. You know, some people are saying, oh, the Fed, you know, they want to raise rates because they don't want to allow the stock market bubble. They don't want the stock market to become a bubble. Too late. The horses are way out of that barn. We already have a bubble, right? Raising rates will prick that bubble. If the Fed wanted to prevent a bubble, they would have raised rates a long time ago. If the Fed wanted to prevent a bubble, they never would have brought rates to zero. They never would have done QE. But Ben Bernanke wanted a stock market bubble. That was his cure. That was his plan the whole time. And he basically said so. He wanted to build a recovery on the wealth effect. He wanted stock prices to go up. He wanted real estate prices to go up. He wanted a bubble. He wanted to return to the bubble days because in Ben Bernanke's mind, everything was great until the bubble burst. What he didn't understand, it was lousy during the bubble. It's just that everybody felt great, because they didn't realize how lousy the economy was. He just wanted to return us to our delusional state. He didn't want us to actually fix the economy, because that would involve some pain. That would involve not taking these drugs, going into monetary rehab. No, he wanted the drug addicts high as a kite again, so they would be too dumb to realize how the economy was getting worse, because that is the political easy thing for them to do. Speaking about politics, we do have the first Republican debate tonight. So probably by the time many of you listen to this podcast, those debates may already be over. And I am looking forward to checking them out myself. Maybe I'll be sending out some tweets if I can think of anything to say during the debates. Again, if you're not following me on Twitter, follow me, and then you can read those tweets. And I might talk about some of the things that are said. Of course, everybody is wondering, you know, what Donald Trump is going to do. I mean, he's the leader now in the polls. He's far and away the leader. So the question is, you know, is he going to say something that causes those numbers to drop, right? I would say that the debate is Trump's to lose, because he's going into the debate as the favorite right now, right? Not necessarily the favorite as far as people actually thinking he's going to win the nomination, but he's the leader in the polls. And so the question is, will he drop? And I'm wondering how the other candidates will handle him. I mean, do they want to take their shots or risk backfiring? So we'll see. I mean, he's going to be certainly the focus of attention. Everybody knows my favorite is Rand Paul. And, you know, in listening to Donald Trump, I think if Donald Trump were to back out, I think the candidate that, you know, that he should endorse is Rand. I mean, one of the things that Donald Trump has been saying that as good as he's been very critical of the Fed, been very critical of the damage of 0% interest rates and quantitative easing. The only other candidate in the race that knows anything about the Fed is Rand Paul. So Rand Paul should be Donald Trump's choice. And hopefully, if the day comes when he drops out, he will endorse Rand Paul for president. But I'm going to be watching, and I'm going to be talking tomorrow. I haven't decided whether I'm going to do a podcast or a video blog. I might end up doing a video blog because I haven't done one in a while. And tomorrow could be a big day. If we get a really bad jobs number, maybe even really a good one. I mean, I think this market is looking very vulnerable, but we could have some big economic news, some big market news. The question is, if we get a really bad jobs number, will we finally have a reaction in the currency markets? Will we finally have a reaction in the gold market? Well, we'll find out tomorrow, so stay tuned. There's so much factually incorrect information and underreporting by legacy media today. Shouldn't there be truth in media? Well, there is. Truth in Media. Recently, a novel thought is now a reality with truthinmedia.com. Led by award-winning journalist Ben Swan, truthinmedia.com is the source for uninfluenced, reliable, fearless news where journalists pursue real questions, not conspiracies. Make truthinmedia.com your default browser's homepage today and get breaking news and commentary that speaks the truth to power. It's also where you can tune into the Peter Schiff Show every week. Visit truthinmedia.com today. That's truthinmedia.com. Access the Truth in Media RSS feed by visiting truthinmedia.com/feed. Attention listeners, I have an urgent message for you. We're in the middle of a war. The global conflict is destroying the lives of millions without a single bomb being dropped. It's called the International Currency War, and your bank account has been drafted to fight. The victims in this conflict are our currencies, the dollar, the euro, the yen, the pound. They are all heading to zero as irresponsible central banks compete to see who can print the most the fastest. But there's one form of money politicians and central banks can't destroy: gold. Today, it's more important than ever to understand the value of gold in your portfolio and to keep a close eye on major market developments. Subscribe to my monthly video cast and you'll be the first to hear my latest analysis on gold investing and the currency wars. Visit goldvideocast.com right now to subscribe for free. I call the dot-com bust, then the housing bust, and I advise clients to diversify into foreign equities and hard assets while the rest of Wall Street laughed at me. Now I want to keep you up to date on the next crisis that is brewing. My gold videocast also includes personal interviews I've conducted with other contrarian investors like Jim Rickards and Axel Merck. Gold has gone up 256% since 2003, but it has a lot further to go. Don't miss the rally. You can prosper during this time of currency wars, but only if you stay educated. Get a free subscription to my gold videocast at goldvideocast.com. That's goldvideocast.com.